This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague,
brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Hope you guys are enjoying your Football Friday. Ooh, that first hour flew right by. And we're going to kick off hour number two in about six and a half hours. They're going to kick off down at Research Stadium, Oregon State taking on the Washington Huskies. They're looking for their fifth win, sitting there second in the North. So we thought it'd be a good idea. Let's bring on Kerry Eggers, our good friend of the Portland Tribune. He's on Twitter, at Kerry Eggers, and he joins us now. Kerry, where's the surprise factor for you that Oregon State potentially could have their fifth win in year two with Jonathan Smith?
Yeah, pretty high level, Brandon. I mean, I picked them to go 3-9. I thought they'd be much improved, but I didn't know if it would show up in the win total. It's turned out their offense is better than we expected. We thought it was going to be good, and the defense has certainly improved. So, I think they've got a decent chance to win tonight.
Yeah, I think that's the next step, too, for him, Kerry, is you've seen him knock off an Arizona or a UCLA, Arizona, getting those wins. But now when you're playing a Washington, it's a bit of a different competition just in terms of the size and the strength up front. How do you think they're ready, maybe leaning back to the experience of what happened against Utah, how they're ready to maybe parlay that into a better effort tonight against one of the bigger teams in the conference?
I think that's a great point, Andy. Yeah, let's not get carried away. They are 4-4, but they got blown out by Utah. They had a difficult time moving the ball against Cal. They got the win. But the strength of schedule beefs up here the last 4 weeks with Washington, Arizona State, Washington State, and Oregon. So this, to me, is the most important game at Oregon State, I would say, in several years.
Yeah.
If they win this game tonight, I think they'll find a way to win one of the last three and go to a bowl game. If they lose, I'm not sure they can win two of the last three. That would mean they'd have to win either at Washington State or Oregon. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So, this is a really big game.
Kerry, and we're talking with Kerry Eggers, columnist for the Portland Tribune. He's heading down to Corvallis, Oregon State, and Washington. Big matchup tonight, 7:30 kick. Kerry, what was your timeline when they hired Smith? What was the timeline in your mind of saying Oregon State can get back to 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 wins, that continuity that they established with Mike? How many years did you think that was going to take for Smith versus is this season changed that timeline for you?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I'd say 3 to 4 years. I thought, again, 3-9 this year. Mm-hmm. Maybe next year with a beefed-up defense, maybe they could win 5 or 6 games. But I am surprised. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that a big factor in all of this has been Brian Lindgren, in my opinion. I think he's done a hell of a job with his play calling. He's developed Jake Luton into a very good quarterback. And the passing game has been, really good. And I think, sure, Jonathan Smith has, a lot of control there. But I think Brian, sometimes we forget the job that he's done.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Luton has had a phenomenal year this year. On his final year of college, it's great to see him have that kind of year. And then looking, too, to the stuff off the field, and, you look no further than their head coach because he experienced it when he was at Oregon State. But, I mean, those Erickson teams, and I'm not saying that Jonathan Smith's going to win a Fiesta Bowl next year, but you go back, and they had a really good mixture of kind of homegrown kids that they found maybe some diamonds in the rough. and then supplementing it with a lot of JC transfers and guys from other programs that were coming in. Does it feel to you that Jonathan Smith now as a head coach is kind of attacking that same thing? I mean, you got Hodgins and Jefferson, some of these guys that are homegrown, but they're really hitting the transfer portal and the JC market hard, and I think that's going to pay dividends for him. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. The transfer portal is a perfect for a school like Oregon State. I think they will gain more kids than they'll lose. They'll lose some too, but I think that they have a good atmosphere. There's a good culture now at Oregon State. The kids that come there will want to play there. They'll make them feel welcome. And let's face it, there's a lot of kids around the country that want to try something new that maybe didn't get a good taste of playing somewhere. And frankly, Oregon State still has a lot of need for some good talent.
Kerry, I made the argument yesterday because we'd found out about the transfer, Charles Moore, who came in from Auburn yesterday. We talked about that, and we talked about the transfer portal and how they're using it. And this weekend, they've got some visitors coming to town, a kicker, a wide receiver, a quarterback. But you kind of look at it, I feel like the transfer also helped them this year, not in the playing sense, because Tyshawn Lindsey's been okay and been amazing. Gums got hurt. Roberts is kind of hit and miss. And then Jebby is not starting. But what I think it also did, Kerry, was it gave you depth. And it feels like it also kind of created this competition within the locker room. I wasn't around the 2000 Oregon State team. You would be better suited to talk about that. But do you think that kind of stuff exists for programs?
Well, first of all, Jordan Whitley and Simon Sandberg have
Whitley,
both two transfers that really, you know, both of those guys have paid off this year. But in general, you're talking now. And what was the question? I kind of had my mind focused on that. What were you asking?
Oh, no, just how you can bring in kids and they add immediate help and depth. And even if they don't end up panning out how you think they will, it feels like this Oregon State team has a lot of players that have developed and gotten better competition in the locker room.
One of the focuses, Brandon, too, is getting guys with 3 years of eligibility rather than one or two.
Yeah.
A couple other guys just have one, a couple of them two, but the majority, like Jebbia and Addison Gums, those guys have 3 years to play. So, yeah, absolutely, those guys provide immediate help, but also, you know, you're getting, like you said, the depth is stronger, and you're getting some guys that are going to play down the road.
Yeah. But what kind of atmosphere are you expecting tonight, Kerry? I know this is one, as you mentioned, it's the biggest game, it feels like, for Oregon State in a while. There's a lot of optimism around the program sooner than maybe some thought, and you got a legitimate chance to make a bowl game if you're to win, as you mentioned tonight. And I've seen some former players kind of take to Twitter and say, hey, let's pack Reese, I know it's a Friday night. What kind of atmosphere are you expecting tonight?
And also, Andy, the weather, it's 65 degrees right now. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Perfect.
But I don't know, because, listen, Friday night is high school night. It's the first night of the playoffs. Will some people not come down for that? I think the student section is going to be absolutely jammed. I'd expect that. I think there'll be several thousand Washington fans probably, or at least a couple thousand that'll be there. So I would expect somewhere, you hope, close to 40,000. I wouldn't think it'd be more than that.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to make a bowl, Kerry? Can they get two more wins with the remaining schedule?
Well, in that I picked them to lose this game, I'm saying no. I don't think they're going to do it, but I wouldn't put it past them. Again, this game, and it's a winnable game. If they can get this, then they've got. I think they'll have the momentum to probably beat Arizona State, and then I think I just think it's going to be tough for them to win in the Palouse against that offense, and then Oregon is, you know, one of the better teams in the country. I don't see him winning down at Eugene.
Kerry Agers is our guest columnist for the Portland Tribune. He's headed down to Corvallis, Oregon State, Washington tonight. Beavs looking for their fifth win against the Washington Huskies. You know, this article came out, Kerry, and I'm curious your thoughts on it, that Pac-12 attendance is down more than any other Power 5. Oregon State, in this region, we tend to talk about it a little more because their attendance is a little down compared to their rival just down south in Eugene. What do you think it's going to take to get attendance back for Oregon State to what it once was? Or do you think those days might be behind us given all of the luxuries of staying at home and watching a game?
Just what you said, I think that's the case. Also, the cost is prohibitively higher for some people. You know, you almost have to have a PSL to get a, you know, good seats. Now, that might change. Listen, you know how it is at Oregon. They pack them for most games because they're winners. If you can get to 8, 9, 10 wins, they'll have a chance. But I don't know, Brandon, that they'll ever average 45,000, or at least it's gonna take something really high, because people just, you know, they're staying at home more and they just don't want to deal with the traffic. As you guys know, the night games are a real problem in Pullman, Eugene, and Corvallis in particular. So I think there's just a lot of things going the other way to hurt the crowds.
All right, there we go. Great stuff from our good friend Kerry Agers, columnist of the Portland Tribune. You can find him on Twitter at Kerry Agers, PortlandTribune.com. He's at the top. You'll see his page there. Kerry, have a safe drive down. Thanks for hopping on with us, and enjoy that game tonight. Hopefully it's a good one.
You're not coming, Brandon?
I'm not. It's my anniversary, so the wife does not want to go to a football game, unfortunately.
Oh, I would have thought that would have been a perfect night for her.
I'm with you. I just overlooked the date. I didn't put it two and two together.
Okay. Take care, man.
There we go. Good stuff from Kerry Agers, Portland Tribune columnist. He's headed down to that game. Oregon State. Look, this is a big moment, and the news came out not only about Charles Moore, who was the transfer from Auburn Dirt.
Yes.
The news came out about some players who will be at tonight's game. So Jack Sears, the former USC quarterback who actually played for the Trojans this year.
Was one of the higher rated quarterbacks coming out of high school, I think, in the class of 2017.
He's three or four in the class of 17 at quarterbacks. So he's coming in because Luton's gone. And, you know, look, they're going for insurance. I don't have a problem with this, and we can talk
about
this
next. Drive the competition,
next.
Man. You can never have too many quarterbacks.
Theo Howard, who some of you may remember seeing that name in a UCLA uniform, wide receiver, and I forget the kicker's name, but a kicker from Arizona State is also in attendance, along with the Charles Moore transfer. So let's talk about this. Oregon State's going for their fifth win. They are the standalone Pac-12 game tonight down at Reser. We've talked about how they haven't had one of those big home wins quite yet. The schedule hasn't lined up for them that way. Is this the night? Is this the night they take that momentum, they build on it, they go for the third straight win? Let's dive into the Beavers versus Washington. We'll do that next on The Fan. Yeah, you get off of my back, baby.
Can't you tell you're choking me? This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hope you guys are enjoying your Friday. Those of you driving down to Corvallis for the matchup between Oregon State and Washington, let's dive into that one. So they got Charles Moore yesterday, transfer defensive lineman from Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Jack Sears, quarterback from USC, is going to be in town tonight. They've got Theo Howard, wide receiver from UCLA, who's transferring on the sidelines tonight, and a kicker from Arizona State on the sidelines tonight. They've won two games in a row. Very convincing win last week and just destroying Arizona. But now Washington comes to town. Now, I think there's only two ways to look at this game, Dirt. It's either going to be a very close or upset, or it's going to be a Washington blowing out Oregon State. Because if Washington shows up, the Washington team we saw against Oregon and Utah, I don't think that's as close. I don't even know if that's as close as 14 points. Washington's a good football team. It's just going to be, is Chris Peterson have that team ready to play? Or are they looking around going, we couldn't beat any of the good teams in our conferences. We're at, what, four losses now?
At 5-4, yeah.
5-4 on the year. You're going to a crap bowl game that nobody cares about outside of Seattle.
Yeah, for the Rose Bowl last year.
What are they going to play like tonight in Corvallis?
That's the million-dollar question, is what kind of Washington team do you get? Now, that being said, even if Washington does bring their A game, I do think there's something that Oregon State can do to make this game not look like the Utah one. I've heard a lot of people use that as the analogy. Well, last time they came home and they had a big opponent coming in and feeling good off of a win, they lost by 50 points. I don't see that happening tonight. I think Oregon State learned their lesson that week. Utah is undoubtedly a better team than Oregon State. We all know that. They're bigger, they're stronger, and they showed it at the line of scrimmage from start to finish. Oregon State also was just awful in that football game, really in every phase of it. They shanked kicks. They couldn't move the ball. They turned it over, which they haven't had a problem with this year, and they couldn't stop the run to save their life. Oregon State's going to have a better effort than that tonight. Does it result in a win? I don't know, because as you're mentioning, I think it's valid. Washington is a better team than you. I think tonight it's just about showing a good effort for your fans, because I do imagine there's going to be a decent crowd on hand, and I would hope there would be. Kerry just pointed out, you can't get better weather than this in early November. It's a perfect night for football. Not too cold. It's not raining. You got a lot of optimism coming off of winning, what, three of your last four games, winning back-to-back. Like, you're feeling good right now, and there should be a lot of butts in the seats. And I think just to give the fans a good one that you can sit around and have a chance maybe to cover the spread going into the fourth quarter, to me, that is a minor victory for Oregon State, because essentially at this point in the season, they're playing with house money. I know you want to get greedy, and that's fine. You want to get to a bowl game, and if they win tonight, I love their chances to get into a bowl game. But You're already exceeded your expectations in terms of wins and losses. You've proven you're no longer the worst team in this conference, which was the first step that you had to make. You've made huge gains in the recruiting area of the transfer portal, and maybe it continues after this weekend with all the guys that are in town to visit. You're playing with house money. I think it's just about putting on a good performance, showing out. Maybe you pull off an upset, but just keep this thing close, and I think that's another big positive step for Oregon State.
You know, I think one area, Oregon State, if Washington comes in there with this half-assed mindset of, yeah, let's go play.
And, no, Oregon State will roll them if that happens.
Well, I think that's, yeah, I think that's a danger zone. But if Washington comes in and even looks even a little vulnerable, I think they're in big trouble. Here's the other part. I think Oregon State can run on them. I've watched Washington against teams that can run the ball. They're not good at stopping the run. I don't think that they are. I think that you can get through some holes there. I think early on in some of their games, they were okay. And then eventually you break it. I think it's why Utah had those last couple drives where they were able to seal that game away, is because when you have extended drives of 80 yards, you're chewing clock.
Yep.
They mixed that. That wasn't all just passing down the field. They were getting runs on the ground. I think Oregon State has the ability. I think they're fourth or fifth right now in rushing offense in the conference. Oregon State has the ability to run on Washington. It's going to be entirely up to Oregon State's defense to be able to get a couple of those stops to keep them in it. I think when you look at Washington's offense, they have that big playability with that arm and Jacob Eason. Obviously, I think Salvon Ahmed can run the ball really well, and I think they'll be able to run on Oregon State. But can Oregon State's defense get two or three three and outs in very timely situations? The kind of stuff where Washington, let's just say, hypothetical, Washington gets the ball, they score a touchdown, 7-0. Oregon State responds, and then Oregon State gets the offense off the field the next possession. Those kinds of moments, I think, make or break your entire game. As much as we want to break down coaching battles, as much as we want to talk about the offense of these two teams, I think it's going to boil down to Oregon State's defense. If the Beavs are going to pull off an upset like this, they're 10-point underdogs right now. If they're going to pull a two-score upset up or off at Reser tonight, it's going to be because their defense ended up getting two, three, maybe four just key stops in the right time.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're going to shut out Washington or hold them below 20 points, anything like that. You just need to come up with a couple of stops here and there. I do agree with you. I think Oregon State's going to be able to run on them. To what level, I don't know. Washington, I think, has a top five run defense in the conference, and that's considering they've even played or already played Utah and Oregon, who are two very good running teams. So those numbers might be a little skewed. I think their run defense is slightly better than what the numbers indicate. But Oregon State should have a decent amount of success. On the flip side, though, the concern for me comes into tonight, and this was the concern going in against Utah. You have a bigger offensive line than what you've seen the last couple of weeks in Washington, and Oregon State's run defense is giving up nearly 190 yards per game on the ground. The only team who's giving up more rushing yards per game is Washington State at 193. So you're number 11 right now on the conference. That's something that's going to have to give. You're going to have to be a little more stout up front, because if Washington can, they're going to turn around and play the Oregon second half of the Civil War strategy on you. We're going to keep your offense off the field. We're just going to pound it down your throat, and there's nothing that you can do about it to get off the field. So Oregon's run defense is going to have to be better than they've been the last couple of weeks, because I don't think you're going to score the way you did against UCLA. I don't think you're going to score against Arizona.
Yeah.
This is going to be more of a Cal type of game.
I would take the under in this game, actually.
I would, too. Cal's got a good defense, and they held you to, what, 24?
21-17.
So they held you to 21. I think you're looking somewhere in that range. So you're going to have to be better defensively, I think, if you want to pull this one off. But one of the numbers that did stand out to me was, and this blew me away, I saw this on Twitter today, Washington only has 33 runs of 10-plus yards on the season. And just to give you a barometer of where that stands, that's 10th in the conference. Utah, for example, is number one. They have 61. Wow. Of runs of 10-plus yards on the season. So Washington, again, and maybe this has to do with playing Oregon and playing Utah, who are two of the better run defenses, I think the two best run defenses in the conference, maybe it has something to do with that. But that tells you that there haven't been a lot of explosive plays in the running game, and I think that's the goal here for Oregon State tonight.
You would probably think of what, the USC run with Ahmed? I mean, outside
probably,
of that.
Probably, right? There hasn't been a ton, and a couple of non-conference here and there, maybe a few against BYU, but that to me is the goal for Oregon State tonight, is to keep everything in front of you. Don't allow those big chunk plays, because you allowed Utah, you played Olay defense against them, and they were breaking runs of 80 yards, 90 yards. They were running it all over. Zach Moss had 100 yards on 5 carries in that football game. You just got to be stronger than that. You're not going to shut them down, but make them work for everything that they get, and then Oregon State will have a chance to hang around.
Yeah, Zach Moss got 100 yards on the ground against the Huskies. They had 115 as a team. Here's another important stat. I was looking at CFB stats this morning. And I wrote this down because I just look at random stats sometimes, and sometimes things will pop. Do you know who number one third down conversion is in the conference?
Oregon State.
Oregon State.
Yeah.
They convert 49% of their third downs. Washington's 11th, 35.
That's not good.
This is a benefit for a defense that's not great.
No.
I don't even know if they're even good, but they're better than what they were. And so if you're going to be able to get those stops that I mentioned, I think it's going to boil down to what third down is. And look, you're probably more right on what the score will be. Again, I would take the under in this. But Oregon State should still be able to score some points. This isn't a Utah defense. This isn't Utah coming in. I hated the Utah game. I hated it. Everybody thought, oh, Utah coming in, get the upset. Didn't feel that way. Utah is legit. Washington's good. Washington is vulnerable. I really believe it. I know the numbers, what they say. But I do think if you establish the ground game, you're going to wear them down. You're going to be able to run late in that game, kill clock, give yourself more possessions, more first downs. And you look at that third down percentage, Oregon State, they might have an opportunity tonight to keep this within striking distance if Washington's going to keep struggling from third down the way they are.
Yeah, if you just look at the numbers, they're nearly identical to Cal this year. And just in terms of total yards, what they're giving up on the ground through the air, Cal's given up 373 yards per game. Washington's given up 375 yards per game. So that's why I use that as the barometer. And again, I think it come full circle on the segment. It all depends on what Washington you're going to see tonight, because we've seen teams over the years that have seasons like this, and it can go south on you in a hurry. They're just not the same level of intensity. You're playing an Oregon State team that has all the juice on their sideline, all the excitement, all the anticipation. You're on the road in a hostile environment that hasn't been hostile now probably since the 2016 Civil War, right? So there's a lot of juice in Corvallis tonight and a lot of excitement around it. In Washington, they don't really have much to play for at this point. I know that sounds stupid to some, but that's a team that has been in competition to win the Pac-12, what, for the last 4 years? They won the conference last year. They played in the Rose Bowl, and now they're looking up. They've been mathematically eliminated in the Pac-12 North because they already have four conference losses, and Oregon doesn't have any with only three games to play. They're done. So, I mean, they're playing for, what, either the Holiday Bowl or the Texas Bowl, or, you know.
They're playing for pride. I mean, at this point, I don't think the bowl game matters. I think you're just playing for pride. Like, what does this Washington team, what do they want to be remembered as? The team that couldn't beat Oregon, couldn't hold a 14-point lead at home, the team that couldn't keep a lead on Utah, and then just quit?
Just caved in on itself.
Or do you want to be looked at as maybe 8-4? And people look back and go, yeah, 8-4, meh, but we'll remember this year and what this conference has been. And I'll always go, yeah, Washington was good. Yeah, they were a quarter away from maybe beating Utah and Oregon.
Well, if they finish 8-4, they got a legit chance to finish third in the conference. They have a head-to-head win over USC, and that would put you, depending on where Oregon and Utah go, you could end up going to the Holiday Bowl or the Alamo Bowl.
And everybody loves going to the Holiday Bowl.
But you lose one more, and all of a sudden you're playing in the Cheez-It Bowl in Phoenix and Diamondback Stadium, and you're finishing the year at 7-5. I think that is a huge part of the game tonight. It's just, what is the intensity level for Washington? And it's just exciting. I know we've said it a lot, but it's just exciting to look at Oregon State, to realize how far they've come already in year 2 under Jonathan Smith. I've said it the last 2 years. I love the way that he's attacking the transfer portal, and programs like Oregon State's going to benefit. We got the news yesterday, and then even more so last night and this morning about all the guys that are there. It's a really smart strategy, and it's why I didn't necessarily hit the panic button. It's hard to recruit first to Corvallis, and second when you're 2-10.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how do you...
What's your pitch?
There's no pitch there. Like,
turn it around with us. That's
right?
Your pitch.
Your pitch is to kids who have already committed to another program and realize they're not going to play, or they're too far down the depth chart, or they didn't like the coach, or something went wrong with their grades. They want to be closer to home. Whatever the argument is, that's your pitch of saying, hey, you want to come play Power 5 college football? Come to Corvallis. You can start right away, and you can make an impact on our team. You can add depth to our roster. He's done a great job of that. And I've never gotten too over my skis on the lack of recruiting rankings and where they stand, because the transfer portal is not going to show up in that.
It's a big one down in Corvallis. What's your gut say right now? Do they cover a 10-point spread? Do they get blown out, you think? Does Washington not show up and we get an upset?
My gut tells me that it's a much closer game than Utah, but I have not seen it for Oregon State against a bigger, stronger opponent yet.
Yeah.
And I would probably take Washington somewhere in the range of 35-21.
So close, but ends up,
back and forth. Washington scores a touchdown maybe near the end to win it by 2 touchdowns. And I would take, right now, I would take the Huskies in a slight cover.
I'm interested to see what Washington team's going to show up. Chris Peterson is, you know, maybe you, I mean, you can make an argument. I know his first 2 years, the way they went, but you can maybe make an argument. This is pivotal. You know, this is, can you get your guys to still play even if everything you started your season playing for is taken away from you? Can you still show that same fight, that same enthusiasm, and take care of it? Because if you show up, your score is probably pretty close to being right. Your score is 14-point difference. That's about what I would say is the difference between these two programs. Hell, even more if Washington's on their A game. But is Chris Peterson going to get that out of his team?
Well, one valid point, I think, from a listener, too, just looking at the Better You Today text line, Washington has been the best third-quarter team in the conference all year, but they can't seem to finish. Oregon State can't let UW bury them early on.
Oh, so that's going to kill the stadium momentum, too, if it comes out Washington's up 14-0. And that, I've been to research too many times to count when that happens, and it sucks the life out of that stadium. That stadium's hard to get back once you trail that big.
The last two games Washington has played, it felt like they were in complete control of. Now, I know Utah and Oregon are at different levels than Oregon State, but they had a 2-touchdown lead on the Ducks in the third quarter, and they were all over Utah earlier in that game last week in Seattle. They couldn't finish down the stretch.
All right, coming up next, would you hire Deion Sanders to be your head coach? Seriously, that's next, but first, Joe with a sports update.
Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
And I'll turn right back around.
Well, Sam, a little offended that we haven't carved out any time yet to talk about how my Oakland Raiders are in the AFC wildcard picture. A little offended, but that's okay. You're still doubting them, huh? Hashtag day. Here come the Raiders.
Well, I love that they're 5-4, and the narrative I heard this morning was, you know, they're doing it their way, and it worked. Like, Colin dropped to it. It's worked. Excuse me? Have they won the Super Bowl yet? Let's calm it down a little bit.
They got a better record than the Bears. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm with you. Look, I'll say this. This year, I'm eating crow a little bit. John Gruden seems to have them playing good. I mean, their best rookie's not even playing. He got hurt after week one.
You can argue, yeah, he was going to be the biggest impact guy, although Jacobs has been phenomenal this year.
Well, Farrell's been really good, too, for them.
It's actually, I every time I hear them call his name, it's actually like Furl.
Furl?
Yeah,
it is.
What is his first name? Clellan?
I think it's Clellan Furl.
Oh, okay.
It's like, who says Furl? Every time you see it, you want to say Farrell. And then I heard him on the broadcast a couple of times. I'm reminded every time I see a Raider game, it's like, oh, that's right, it's Furl.
Yeah. Speaking of Farrell, Will Farrell's got Step Brothers on Netflix.
All right. Well, there you go. See, you just want to change the topic. You don't even want to talk about my Raiders and how they had a good pass rush last night.
Hey, can I say that
dominant
was
dominant in the front?
That was a good game.
That was a really good game.
I had that one on my laptop and then watched the Blazers on TV when they tipped.
And what a disservice to have the last primetime game in Oakland be on a Thursday night.
That's the last one for the year, huh?
The last primetime
game. Unless one gets flexed, you know, if they start winning and are a playoff team, potentially they might throw them on Sunday night. But, I mean, that was the last primetime game, and if you were watching, that place was lit.
The scene of John Gruden running around, high-fiving everybody after that game, that was cool, man. I feel bad for the city of Oakland is just getting railroaded in that case. They love their Raiders. They always have.
Fans are getting railroaded. No, you're right. I take it back. You actually are right. Because the city should be holding the stance of, we're not building your
stadium. Build your own damn stadium.
You make billions of dollars.
So it's kind of sad that they only got a few more home games left. But Raiders got a nice win last night, and that was fun to watch. A couple of college football notes we need to get to. And this one, I think Joe Fisher retweeting this was the first reason I saw it. And I thought, please, God, let this happen. Please let this happen. Florida State's the gift that keeps on giving. And they hired Willie Taggart away. He was awful. And after starting 4-5 this year, they fired him. Well, now the rumors continue to swirl about who they're going after for their next coach. It was going to be Bob Stoops. And Bob Stoops dropped a humble brag. I was drinking with Dan Marino. I wasn't actually looking for the Florida State gig. So everybody's kind of moved on now. And the latest rumor, I think Rappaport was the first one to have this. The latest rumor, and I don't know how serious it is that Deion Sanders is a legitimate candidate to be the next head coach of Florida State.
I'm going to go out there and say this right now.
Please let this happen.
I love it.
Wow.
I'm
not going to say I hate it because I don't know how to, I have no clue about his football IQ and what he's like as a coach.
100%.
I just want it for the entertainment purposes.
Well, that, because you know some kid would break off a run and Deion would be caught on the sidelines, high-stepping on the sidelines with him into the end zone.
Chasing him down.
But, you know, I understand we don't know what he's like as a head coach. If he even knows the ins and outs and the nuances of coaching versus just going out there and letting your instincts take over.
I believe he is a coordinator for his son's high school football
team. Coached in high school.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I don't know how much college coaching is at just, oh, one coach and they do it all versus shifting to having this CEO thing. Look, I did not acknowledge this. I don't think anybody really did. When they hired Herm Edwards, for example.
Yes.
We all laughed. We all dismissed. And it may still end up not working out in the long term. But they've had some success this year. They did better than some people thought they would last year. And what is their model? CEO. Okay, you can give me the argument. Well, Sprague, he was a head coach in the NFL. Of course that worked. All right, fine. I'll give you that. I'll give you one that's currently maybe the top coach in college football right now. He had no head coaching experience. Dabo Swinney. He was a special teams or wide receivers coach. He was like the fourth assistant on a staff. And they gave him the interim job. And it didn't even start out all that well.
Yeah.
And eventually, what did he do? He's doing what Ed Orgeron's doing. Ed Orgeron's doing this as well. Ed Orgeron knows how to coach the defensive line. Ed Orgeron doesn't know every nuance, every in and out, right? But what Ed Orgeron does know is if you hire a staff of good people, you can succeed. Again, I know some of these guys I've named were head coaches. Dabo was at least in college. But if Deion Sanders were to honestly get a legit interview and become a finalist, you would have to sit in that room and go, okay, if we hire Deion Sanders, as much as we're going to get made fun of, what staff can he put together?
Yeah, what kind of coordinators can he get?
And then you tell me what kid is having Deion Sanders come into his living room and they're saying no to primetime.
He'd be a hell of a recruiter, man.
I don't even care what year Deion retired. Deion Sanders' highlights are immortal.
Primetime.
Almost all those kids he'll recruit never watched him play live. That doesn't matter, man. They'll YouTube him. They'll go, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's Deion Sanders.
So I know how that looks. I know the optics of Florida State right now are not great, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that think this is a stupid idea. If you're Florida State, you're not getting Dabo. You're not getting Urban. I don't know how many more choices you need before you say, let's try Deion Sanders if he can get the right staff together.
It is amazing just that this is in consideration. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I really don't. I think there's a lot of coaches out there that have that model. Hell, I'd even argue that's Mario Cristobal. Mario Cristobal is the CEO at Oregon. He doesn't call. I mean, he has an impact on the offense. I'm not saying he doesn't do that, but he's a recruiter. He's a good motivator, right? You like the culture that he instills in the program. He focuses on the offensive line. If anybody who's ever been to an Oregon game early enough to watch him warm up, he's down in the end zone working with the linemen. Like that, he's not walking around looking at the team. He's not talking to Herbert. He's over like yelling at the offensive lineman.
He knows what his hat. Yes, right? He knows what his strength's going to be in a practice, and he does it.
And he goes. He trusts Marcus Arroyo to come up with a game plan offensively. Again, he has a hand in it, but he trusts Arroyo to call the plays. And he does the same thing now for Andy Avalos defensively, and he did it for Levitt last year too. But he said, hey, you're my D coordinator, man. You put that thing together. You're going to call the plays on that side. Let me be the CEO of the program. So, yeah, in that regard, I don't disagree with anything you're saying about Deion Sanders. I think it was just the shock to the system when it was reported last night, and I just want it to happen because it would be entertaining as all hell.
I'm with you.
Herm Edwards is entertaining, and I want more guys like that. Deion would be the same way.
When I saw Rappaport tweet that out, I went, is that real? I checked to make sure it was the real Ian Rappaport, and it for sure was. So
that was reported. What do you think? How would Deion Sanders be it as a head coach in college football? 55305 is the Betty today. Text line. We also have another bombshell to get to in college football that we have not discussed yet today. As one of the best players, a Heisman contender, is out this weekend and maybe longer with an NCAA violation, and he admitted it on Twitter. What the hell's going on? We'll get into that crunch time coming up next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time.
Were you?
No.
I was.
Yeah, I was. Come on!
No days off!
I
ain't having that. You got me? I ain't having that.
I went.
Get your ass to the gym, Sprague.
I went.
Jesus.
All right, it's been a while since I've been here, okay? And there's like 16 different drops around the one I need to, so I'm just guessing at this
point. They're firing them off.
Yeah. There's an individual at the gym that when I get there super early, look, I don't like working out all that much. I just do it because I have this weird addiction with it.
Sure.
When I show up early, I'm not in a mood to be buddies. I just want to go do the work and get out of there.
Yeah.
And there's an individual that I see almost every time I go, and they are, it's like they've been awake since 2 a.m.
Yeah, I hate those kind of
What's
people.
What's up, man? Let's go, huh?
Brandon, how the heck are you, buddy?
Well, bright and early.
He's like an old school radio DJ. He's like, all right, coming up next, you're going to go work your biceps.
He's got that wacky DJ voice.
Yeah.
You just want to say, would you shut up and get out of my way?
Also made a comment one time. Very complimentary. Very nice person. So I'm not trying to bash the individual.
Does he know who you are? Or is it just like your workout bros?
He puts me in the workout bro category. But one time I was in the locker room and I was just going to the restroom and then leaving. And he came in and I was, oh, it's you, dude. He goes, dude, you're getting cut, man. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye, have a good day.
We also had a coworker joke the other day. He was worried about you standing outside because you could blow over in the wind. So be careful out there, right? It's treacherous, okay? It's a dangerous time of year for you.
That coworker only made that comment because he's gained 12 pounds. No, actually,
fat
he
jokes.
Sizzler.
Well, if you're going to skinny shame, I should be able to fat shame.
Yeah, that's valid. I'll grant you that. You can fat shame away. If I make fun of you for being skinny, fire away.
I think Bill Maher had that bit. He was like, we should be fat shaming. He had like a whole bit about why we should still fat shame. Didn't go over well.
No, not in 2019 at least. A couple of quick thoughts here, and then we'll get to the big news of the day in college football. Somebody texted in the drawback with the CEO coach model is that you're so dependent upon having good assistants. But as soon as those assistants start leaving or start doing really well, they leave for head coaching jobs. You're right back to where you began. I think Oregon has a bit of this with Cristobal right now. Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, not every place is like Clemson. I mean, you mentioned the Dabo model. He's had Brent Venables there, I believe, his entire time. Right? Yeah. He's one of the more respected minds in college football defensively. He's just never jumped for a job. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. That's the rare occasion of guys sticking around.
Well, and Aranda, too, at LSU, he doesn't strike me as a guy that needs a head coaching gig. I think him and Venables, they're either cut from a different cloth or they're both at institutions that are willing to pay them damn near $3 million a year to just be a coordinator.
That's the thing. It's a lot easier to do this at places that are big-time programs that have the pool for assistants. If Oregon State tried to go this route, it'd be more difficult because can't pay guys seven figures to be your coordinators.
Right.
So it helps to be at a bigger
place. Is Florida State still that, though?
Well, I mean, they got to pay a lot of money to Willie Taggart, so I don't know what the coffers are looking like after that, but if you're going to hire Deion Sanders, you better make sure you have that money.
Well, I would think, too, paying out Willie Taggart to get out of there, that has to be an indication that no matter the cost, you're going to do what it takes to get back to winning. So whether that's Deion or not, I think they've got to have their eyes. I know Feinbaum had this. A lot of people see it right now. It doesn't look good for Florida State. You've got to make this right hire. I mean, this is everything for your program.
Now, the one thing I will say about Deion Sanders in Florida State is that he does those truth camps, those Truth 21 camps, which are actually a big deal for recruits and prospects.
Is that like an 11-on-11?
Yeah, 7-on-7. Yeah, stuff. One of those. And a lot of the top prospects and recruits go to those camps, and he's been doing it for what seems like a decade now.
Okay.
And he gets a lot of Florida guys going out there. So I think he's probably build enough relationships throughout the years doing those camps.
I agree with
that.
He
knows high school coaches, he knows college coaches, players, parents, to where that could benefit him going into the job right away. But has he ever coached a major university program?
Well, no.
No. And that's the big what if right
there. Yeah, two more quick thoughts. Somebody, one of our P1 sexed in. Deion Sanders is a good recruiter, will win parents over, and with good talent, you can always find good assistants. See Bama, old USC, Notre Dame. Yeah, there's a certain aspect to that where if you can get the best talent in the country year in and year out, it can overcome some coaching issues, especially in the ACC. That conference sucks, man.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an X's and O's genius. Now, you do when you get to the highest level to beat Clemson or to win a national championship, but to win 10 games every year playing against Duke and North Carolina, if you're stocked with 4 and 5 stars, you're going to win those football games more time than not.
Well, and it's not, this isn't to suggest at all because he's actually swaying me a little the other way, but like I think Cristobal, when he got the job officially, it's pretty evident, right? His thought was just, doesn't matter. Go get the best talent.
Yeah, go
and we'll
load
figure
it
out after that.
Yeah, we'll put a staff around him eventually.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's what Deion, I'm presuming if Deion ever got that kind of gig, it would be, all right, I'm going to go lock all these kids up, get them to Florida State. And then I'll get the right assistants around. We'll coach him up.
Somebody said, why have Deion go straight to head coach? Why not start him as a coordinator, make him earn the job? I don't think he takes that job. I think if you're going to get him, and who knows if this even happens. It's just floated as a rumor. Bob Stoops was as well. That didn't happen. So take it with a grain of salt. But I don't think he's taking a coordinator job. He probably makes a lot of money with the NFL Network and doing all his stuff. He's not going to just go be a D coordinator.
He's a Herm Edwards. He's either going to be a star on television and be on a network of some sort, or he's being the head coach. He's not going to be the guy who grinds, and he's a coordinator, and he recruits, and you rarely ever see him. Deion is a guy that has to be in front of the camera.
Let's get to this. This was a big bombshell this morning. Chase Young is so good this season at Ohio State that he's legitimately in the Heisman conversation. Like, he's been that dominant. He has 13.5 sacks in 8 games for the Buckeyes this year. Their defense allows the fewest points per game in the country, only 7.9. They have been dominant, and a big reason is because of him. Well, he announced on Friday himself that he is going to miss tomorrow's game. I believe they play Maryland.
Yeah,
I believe Maryland.
44-point favorites.
Yeah, a giant favorite against Maryland.
Kind of want to take Maryland plus 44 now.
Beware of that, man. Ohio State's a cover machine.
I know.
With or without him, I feel like. But he announced he's missing the game because there is an eligibility issue concerning a loan that he borrowed from a family friend. So he posted on Twitter, unfortunately, I won't be playing this week because of an NCAA eligibility issue. I made a mistake last year by accepting a loan from a family friend I've known since the summer before my freshman year at OSU. I repaid it in full last summer, and I'm working with the university and NCAA to get back on the field as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So there's been really differing reports on this. A lot of people were like, why would you take to say this on Twitter? Just let the stuff play out behind the scenes. Don't admit to anything. Like, just let the administration handle this. So people were critical of him, but I appreciate the transparency at least.
I think, I get that, but doesn't this smell? I mean, look, I know how the paying looks and stuff, the money. This doesn't smell like a prototypical took money from somebody type deal. This actually seems like it might be pretty legit, based on the approach that they're taking from the university angle and even the personal angle.
That's been the weird thing about it, is because you've had very differing reporting on this. And this, we're just going to have to wait and see. But it was initially reported like this is a huge compliance issue. He took the money. Doesn't matter if he paid it back. Some people were reporting. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk reported that he heard that the guy who gave him money was a certified agent, which then added a whole nother twist to this thing. And him saying that it's a family friend, somebody reported, well, now you have to prove how long have you known him. You got to prove it's not just some random booster that you met right before you got to Ohio State and he gave you the money. But then
they're saying it's not.
Right. And they've had Joe Klatt come out and say he's talked to people that say, no, it's not an agent. No, it's not a booster. It legitimately was a family friend and he was repaid. So there's no issue here. It's just they got to clear it out, and it's going to be a game or two until he's back. They don't play. I think they got two more.
Yeah, they have two
games,
and then it's Penn State.
Yeah,
I think it's Maryland and Rutgers.
I'll pull it up real quick. But this is a bombshell, and it was being reported earlier. They're going to have to vacate wins, all this kind of stuff. Now it seems like that's been walked back a little bit. But
if it's indicated,
a twist of the season.
If it's indicated that it's an agent or it's a booster, the rule will state that he was playing while ineligible because that is not prohibited. And if they find that to be true, they will have to vacate. So that's the wrinkle dynamic of the playoff. If you're Oregon, Utah, Oklahoma, these teams, Clemson's fifth, these outside teams, Ohio State is largely considered the number one team in the country, just the way they've looked. He's been a big part of that. If they have to vacate wins, there's going to be something opening up there.
Yeah. And you're right. They play Maryland this week at home. Then they go to Rutgers on the 16th. And then they close at home versus Penn State. And then on the road at Michigan. Those are their four last games.
I thought, I think it was Jen Burley, who works at the Portland Diamond Project. I thought she made a funny point. She goes, oh, so you mean he'll be suspended for Maryland, Rutgers, and be back in time for Penn State? Yeah, probably. Probably.
That's probably how it's going to go. Yeah, so that was the big bombshell of the day. Chase Young reported it himself on Twitter. And people are, it's been differing. I think everybody's kind of taking shots in the dark with this. You just got to wait and see how it plays out, because it was disaster mode early on. Vacating wins, everything's going to crumble in on him. And then people are saying, whoa, hold on. He got the money. It was a loan from a family friend. He paid it back well before any of this stuff was reported. There's nothing illegal going on here. They just got to cross the T's and dot the I's, if you will, from a compliance standpoint, which is stupid that we even need to do. But that's where we're at with the NCAA, and that was the big story of the season. It is unfortunate because now he's not going to play two games. He's a ton of fun to watch. They're going to beat their next two opponents without him in Maryland and Rutgers. But any hope of having a defensive player likely in the top five Heisman candidates, see, unless he comes back and just dominates Penn State and Michigan if he does miss two games, is unfortunate because it would have been fun to see him in New York. The only time this will come into play, I think, is a legitimate short-term concern here, is if nothing is resolved 2 weeks from now. Because, Penn State's a good team. Are they as good as Ohio State? No. But you take Chase Young off the field and how dominant he is, maybe that game's slightly different, but that's the one to keep an eye on, and we'll see how it plays out in the next couple of weeks. Chase Young suspended this weekend for taking a loan and paying it back. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. Locally owned and operated with 6 locations to serve you. Last to get to in the final hour, we've got to answer our poll questions. We'll give you some final thoughts on Oregon State and Washington, a big showdown in Corvallis tonight. How do we think that one's going to go? We got a Sprague the Line coming up at 2:30, so get your fake sponsors into 55305. We already got some good ones. I got to bounce back, man. I was 0-3 last week.
You went 0-3 last week?
0-3, man. Not pretty.
Those aren't fun weekends.
Swigart and I both went 0-3 last weekend, so.
Swag went 0-3?
We need to bounce back this week. I got Swag's picks. He texted them to me, so we'll give those coming up. Get your fake sponsors in. We'll start the final hour, though, as we do every Friday with our Pac-12 picks against the spread. Who's winning and losing this weekend in the conference? That's next on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.